Between the Lines
with Sarah McInerney.
This is News Talk.
We're joined this morning by Catherine Noon, Fine Gael Senator and Chair of the Oireachtas Committee on the Eighth Amendment, to discuss the committee's work, which is almost wrapped up. Catherine, you're going to produce your report next week, but we got the votes this week, so we have a good idea as to what's going to be in that report. You're almost at the finish line. Will you be happy to be rid of it?
Well, I will. And I don't mean to be flippant, but it has been an intense experience, and it's been a privilege to do the work, and I'm very, very glad that I did. But I will be glad to, as they say, hand it over or pass it on to someone else's desk now, which will be Minister Harris and, I suppose, the Taoiseach and the government.
So, was it more intense than you were expecting?
I suppose I didn't really know what to expect, but I never thought it was going to be easy. So and it wasn't, but it was. I think it was an excellent process, and you know, it's such a divisive and difficult area, issue for so many people that naturally it's going to be a difficult committee, or it was always going to be a difficult committee to chair.
A lot of people have said, agreed with you, that it was an excellent process, and a lot of people have commended the work of the committee and the very thorough work that you did. Others, however, as I'm sure you're well aware, have criticised some of the aspects of how the committee did its work. In hindsight, do you think you could have or should have tried harder to get more pro-life advocates on the committee, or people speaking from a slightly more pro-life point of view?
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to be clear about this, because the process was agreed upon by every member of the committee. And we agreed as a group. I didn't suggest any witness myself as chair. We decided that we would use witnesses who attended before the Citizens' Assembly and witnesses suggested by members. Now, the reality is that some members bought into that process more than others. And the other reality is that it is very difficult to get medical practitioners in this country to come into a committee of the Oireachtas to state that the status quo should be maintained.
And do you think that's because medical people in this country don't believe that just the majority opinion is pro-choice in the medical legal community?
I can't speak for all of the medical community, but certainly the ones who attended before us, in particular Professor Fergal Malone, I think is worth mentioning, because he specifically said that he had never given a view about this issue publicly, and that the bottom line is he's neither pro-life nor pro-choice. That polarising argument, if you were sitting in our committee, it in a way felt out of place, because the medics that we were hearing from were simply giving us the facts as they find them on a daily basis dealing with women and women's healthcare.
So you don't think, just to be clear, you don't think there's anything else you could have done as chair of the committee when it became clear that these criticisms were gaining some traction, or at least they were going to become a central tenet of the pro-life campaign's criticisms?
In retrospect, the one thing I think that was probably strategically something that happened, that the fact that we had the vote,
yes,
on not to retain Article 40.3.3, if that hadn't happened then it wouldn't have been used tactically as a reason not to buy into the process. So that, I suppose, tactically by the members, it wasn't something that I could control, because everything was a committee decision. But it would have been better to have all votes at the end, in that sense. But not to say that vote, there was a huge misconception and lack of understanding about what actually that vote was. We were just saying, yes, we think there should be a referendum.
But you think if you hadn't had that vote, it wouldn't have given a stick to those who wanted to criticise the committee to beat you with?
Well, you can say that, Sarah, but yeah.
All right. Do you think there was an anti-woman vibe from some of the members?
The members, for the most part, were extremely professional and, worked very hard. I've had a lot of, I suppose, personal stuff said to me, but I've just really and genuinely tried not to take it personally and got on with the work, because that's all a distraction from the work that we were doing. Mm.
Was it misogynistic, though, what has been said to you?
Pardon?
Was it misogynistic, the comments that were being made to you?
Well, there are misogynistic comments made every day of the week in Leinster House that, in fairness to a lot of my male colleagues, they don't even mean to be misogynistic. It's something that the vast majority of my colleagues over the last number of days, male and female, have been unbelievably supportive and positive in their comments to me. And that's what the vast majority do.
All right.
You know, I don't really want to concentrate on the negative.
I understand that, because obviously there was the Matty McGrath comment earlier this week. I don't think you have commented on that to date, have you?
No, and I won't. You know, I just don't think it's worthy of comment.
Aside from that, I'm not going to press the point any further than this, but I am interested in this idea of an anti-woman vibe at the committee. I know you're saying most of the members weren't, but do you think some of the members were?
I'd like not to get into that. You know, as a woman, it is difficult in politics. It's more difficult again in a committee. A lot of people have said, "Oh, if the chair was male, she wouldn't be treated like that." Mm. That's what has been said.
Do you agree?
You know, I don't want to comment. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't want to play the victim. You know, it was a difficult process. It would have been a difficult process for a man or a woman. You know, that's the reality.
But more difficult because you're a woman,
perhaps.
All right. In terms of looking forward then, do you think it's important that the government takes a position on this? I know Fine Gael as a party is going to get a free vote in it, as is Fianna Fáil, but some talk that the cabinet may take a position on it. Do you think that that's important in terms of getting this referendum across the line?
Well, I suppose on this issue, there's an issue of conscience, obviously. So ideally, there would be a free vote for all members of the Oireachtas, regardless of whether they're ministers. But I suppose if a government proposes a referendum, it would be unprecedented, I think, or perhaps it only happened once before, that an entire cabinet didn't support the proposition in the referendum. You know, because obviously a government usually wants a referendum to pass. But this is an unusual one, and I don't know what way it will unfold, to be honest. We'll just have to wait and see on that one.
I suppose I'm just wondering, from someone who's been involved in the process, you know, you're very close to it at this stage. I'm sure it's something that you would like to see successfully executed. So I'm just wondering, do you think from that point of view, in order for it to be successfully executed, for the referendum to pass, it's important that the government takes a position? Would that help?
I actually would differ with you on that, in the sense that I think the less politicians have to say about this issue, the better. The Irish people will decide this issue, and if advocacy groups and people who have been affected and some politicians, you know, obviously are going to have to take a lead on it. But the reality is that I think it's important that people hear from people who've been affected and the experts who are dealing in this area.
Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil shouldn't run a campaign, for example? Stay out of it?
I don't think that they could not run a campaign, but I think it would be something worth considering, that politicians don't necessarily get too involved in the campaign, to be honest. Yeah.
All right. And just finally then, Catherine, what we've seen through both the Citizens Assembly process and your own process is that when people sit down and listen to the experts, there's views on this issue. Not always, but sometimes do change. And we saw people on your committee who came in from a pro-life position and moved further towards pro-choice views as they heard from the experts. But that was a very intense situation, as you well know, over a long number of weeks listening to experts for long, long days at a time. Do you think there's enough time, or is there enough time in the world to bring the Irish public on that journey?
Well, certainly no one individual who isn't actually working in this area is going to get time to hear the amount of testimony that we did. I mean, we were hours. Actually, I must calculate the amount of hours that we spent reviewing this issue. But the reality is that, you know, you say that people were on a journey, and that is so true. But I think what it came down to for a lot of people who would be much more conservative in their viewpoint on this is that when it comes to rape and incest, it's impossible to legislate. And the abortion pills are being taken. And that was something that Justice Lafoy said to us, if there was one thing they needed to spend more time on. She was asked, is there anything we should do? And she said, the area of abortion pills. We only got that towards the end, and we realised that it was a huge issue. So we spent a lot of time hearing about, we heard from one particular expert in detail on it, but it was a feature of a huge amount of our deliberations. And the reality is that Irish women are taking abortion pills, and they're procuring them for the most part over the internet in an uncontrolled, unregulated way. And I don't think that we can continue to support that position.
All right. Catherine Noon, Fine Gael Senator and Chair of the Oireachtas Committee on the Eighth Amendment, which is almost finished. Your work is almost finished. Catherine, thank you very much for joining
us this morning,
and I hope you're looking forward to a lovely Christmas.
You too. Thank you very
much. Thanks, Catherine. And we're joined now by Ellen Coyne, Senior Reporter with the Times Ireland Edition. Ellen, thank you very much for coming into us this morning. You have been covering the committee's work very extensively, very thoroughly since it started. So we wanted to have a chat to you this morning, I suppose, about where to now, but also how we got to this point. And you heard Catherine Noon there saying it was very intense, very, very difficult process. Did you think watching it that we would get to where we got to? Was it obvious the change was happening?
Halfway through it was, but I mean, if you'd asked me in September before it started if it would come to that same result, I probably would have said no, because I thought the only reason the Citizens' Assembly came to that recommendation is because the politics was taken out of it. And I mean, you did see, they didn't quite do the same thing as the Citizens' Assembly, as in voting for 12 weeks. They did it with a caveat of this Fianna Fáil motion saying, by the way, the only reason we're voting for this is because it's to make clear to us that we can't legislate for rape on its own. And I mean, you know, for the last few years, the mantra has been rape, incest and fatal abnormalities. And everyone thought that was the only conceivable thing. But having watched it, you couldn't tell from the questions that the deputies were asking, people like Fianna Fáil Senator Ned O'Sullivan asking things about, you know, a woman's right to autonomy, using this kind of like almost like feminist academic language. You could see that there was a change in the room. There was a standout moment when Anne Rabbit, the Fianna Fáil TD, said to an advocate from One Day More, which is a group that wants to continue pregnancies diagnosed with significant fetal abnormalities, that she really disagreed with her, that to advocate for a woman to continue a pregnancy that would put her life at risk when she has two other children at home was just abhorrent to Anne, and she would have been seen as on the pro-life side of things. James Brown, again another pro-life Fianna Fáil TD, was just saying he thinks that we all need to sit down and rethink how we look at the Eighth Amendment, because if it doesn't work, and in his view it didn't because people were buying abortion pills, it doesn't work as a piece of legislation. And I think one of the most interesting things that the senator said, the chair of the committee, was when she was defending this idea that there was X number of pro-life speakers and X number of pro-choice speakers. I think people on the anti-abortion side seemed to think that this committee was set up to debate the pros and cons of abortion, like the moral rights and wrongs, and that's obviously that's impossible. What it was set up to do was argue, is the Eighth Amendment a good amendment? Is it a good piece of legislation? And the conclusive answer was no. And just because you have medical experts, the World Health Organization, the masters of all the maternity hospitals, the Irish College of General Practitioners, the Department of Health and the HSE all saying that, doesn't mean that it's biased. It means that the argument on that side is overwhelming on an evidence base.
You mentioned Fianna Fáil there a couple of times and the different Fianna Fáil TDs and senators who went on a journey, I suppose, their own personal journey during the committee. That's, I suppose, one of the most shocking things to come out of this committee is that we saw three of the Fianna Fáil TDs supporting abortion, unrestricted abortion up to 12 weeks. Billy Kelleher and Lisa Chambers and who was the third? Ned O'Sullivan, the senator, of course. Yeah. That doesn't, however, mean if we look at the raw politics of this going forward, that's not representative of the party at large. We saw that at the Ordesh, their own Ordesh, a couple of weeks ago now, where they voted for a motion to keep the Eighth Amendment. So what happens there in that party going forward? How do they reconcile their position at the committee with their position in reality, I suppose?
You're absolutely right. I mean, there's so much anxiety amongst the kind of pro-choice Fianna Fáilers now that, first of all, their party will not move because it'll be seen as betraying certain sections of the grassroots. Second of all, those people obviously couldn't have sat down and seen all the evidence that they did. And the other issue, obviously, is they're going to have a free vote. So they've got this issue now where it doesn't really seem possible at this point that the majority of Fianna Fáil TDs would support that kind of law, 12-week access. But at the same time, they're in a bind because internally, Fianna Fáil is getting polling advice telling it that if it is seen as the party that scuppers a referendum, it will be punished as well. So they really, I mean, it is just the classic Irish issue with abortion of being stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Just to be clear in terms of what the vote in the Dáil is going to be on, the vote is going to be on whether or not to hold a referendum, and the question will be given to the deputies as to what that referendum will be. Will the legislation also be given to deputies at that point? So they'll have all the information and say, yes, we want to put a referendum to the people, with the commitment that this legislation will be enacted on the back of that referendum if it's passed. So that's what the Fianna Fáil TDs have to vote on.
There would be like...
Or that's what all TDs have to vote
on. That's what all the Dáil will have to vote on. I mean, Simon Harris's department is working on about 10 drafts at the moment that kind of covered all the possible recommendations that could have come, you know, fatal abnormality only, rape only, whatever. They've actually now got a really easy job, because this would be the simplest one to legislate for, free access up to 12 weeks. But everyone accepts that we can't go into a referendum without showing the people exactly what the law that would be passed afterwards would be. So even though deputies might just be voting to allow a referendum to happen, they're going to be getting pressure from people in their constituency saying, if you vote to allow a referendum, you are essentially voting for so-called abortion on demand.
Mm.
And nobody, if we didn't have that, we would have had the same mantra that Micheál Martin and Enda Kenny previously had been saying, you know, people won't vote for repealing the Eighth Amendment if they don't know what they're voting for. Now they do know what they're voting for, and it is probably something that Enda Kenny never could have imagined when he first set up the Citizens Assembly.
Well, it's not just Micheál Martin and Enda Kenny who've had problems with this. Leo Varadkar has also wrestled with himself in it. Let's have a listen to what he had to say about this in January 2016.
If we do have a referendum on repealing the Eighth Amendment, I would like to know, and I think the public would like to know, what's going to come next. There are three options. One, leave it as it is, which I don't support. There are then two alternative options. One is the divorce model. The model, for example, used for divorce, or the model, for example, used for marriage equality, which is to put in something new into the Constitution and then have legislation to follow it, and people would see the legislation in advance, they'd know what was going to happen, and they'd know what they were voting for. Yeah. And then the third option, which is just to, you know, repeal it all together and leave it up to the Dáil and Seanad of the day to introduce any law that they want, which again I think would probably be defeated, actually, were it put to the public in that way, because the public will actually want to know. Because actually, if you just repeal the 8th, it doesn't change anything. You go back to the 1867 Act, so you'd have to bring in, no matter what you do, you have to bring in some form of legislation to provide for terminations of pregnancies in certain circumstances. And bear in mind, when you take out the 8th, pretty much all the case law that arose from that falls too. Mm. So I don't think you can ask the people to just vote to repeal the 8th without being able to tell them what might happen next. I think the public would expect that. But I'd certainly like to see things like term limits. You know, people use the term pro-choice, but actually most people I know who are pro-choice want restrictions on choice written into the law, particularly around things like term limits. But that's the kind of conversation, actually, if we decide to repeal the 8th, we're going to have.
So that was January 2016, and I mean, we get a little bit of insight on into where he was coming from then, and I know that he has also travelled a bit of a journey. Now, we don't know how far he's gone in that journey, but he used to be very pro-life and in a very strong pro-life position, whereas he does seem to be open to change and isn't in favour of retaining the 8th. So that's him. But Fine Gael within the party as well have their own problems, don't they? Because on the committee itself, you had Peter Fitzpatrick, very, very, one of the most ardent pro-life people on the committee. And you also had Hildegard Nocton, even though she travelled a bit of a journey towards a pro-choice position, she was also, she voted no against a lot of the amendments or proposals for the legislation, rather. So how do you see Fine Gael landing on this?
I think the most interesting thing about Fine Gael is that they've suddenly become like the reluctant pro-choice party. They brought in the Citizens Assembly, which actually opened up the prospect of 12-week access for the first time. They set up the committee, which made that an actual political possibility probably for the first time.
And they wouldn't have expected any of that,
no,
of course.
I'm not saying that that was intentional or giving them that sort of credit. But even if you look at people like Simon Harris, I mean, in 2011, he was actually on a pro-life platform, and he staunchly defended his right to be a pro-life Fine Gael TD. And now he has completely moved, and actually, I think, wants to be the minister who has that on his Wikipedia page. I think that we talk a lot about how similar Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are, and, you know, couldn't put a cigarette leaf between them. But actually, on this issue, I think you're starting to see the difference with the grassroots. Like, the grassroots on the Fianna Fáil side are seething at the idea that it was a Fianna Fáil amendment, as you said, that got this 12-week vote. Whereas on Fine Gael, I'm not sure that they have, they certainly do have very pro-life people in their grassroots. I don't know if they have them to the same extent as Fianna Fáil. And I think there is an acceptance that Fine Gael will probably be the party that leads to a referendum on repealing the Eighth Amendment.
Okay, so that's all to come next year. Now, already this week we've seen some of the arguments that are going to be brought up by both sides, and some of the ones from the pro-life side that I've seen this week already, you know, there are things that are going to make people feel really uncomfortable when they go to the ballot box next year. Like, for example, a figure that I've seen trotted out a lot already this week is that 1 in 5 pregnancies in the UK end in abortion, 200,000 abortions in the UK every year. What do you think the pro-choice side can say to that? Because there is a bit of a problem here in that we don't really know exactly how many women in Ireland are getting abortions, but there's very little to be able to counteract and say that won't happen here.
With absolutely no disrespect to the pro-choice campaigners, I'm sure they won't be happy with this, but if the committee is anything to go by, the referendum won't be run on feminism, it will be run on pragmatism, like an Irish sense of common sense. It's not actually because people think female autonomy should be vindicated and this great kind of feminist idea of free, safe, legal and a woman's right to choose. It's actually going to be the pills are already here, people are already travelling, the Eighth Amendment doesn't work. Some people would argue maybe it did more harm than good. Like, this is probably an international anomaly in that we're actively trying to take the heat and emotion out of it.
So even if 1 in 5 pregnancies in the UK end in abortion, you think that, whether, I don't know if this will happen or not, but you think that the campaign might go in the direction of, well, that's really besides the point to an extent, because either way, what we're looking at here is the fact that X amount of women are accessing abortion pills up to 12 weeks. Therefore, it makes sense for us to make that legal here so that those women who are doing it anyway can get access to healthcare safely.
Yeah, I mean, the line from the cabinet so far, I know a lot of people aren't coming out, but I think it's so far Regina Doherty and Catherine Zapone have been fully supportive of the 12-week limit. And both of them were speaking along the lines of, you know, some women have abortions and they say that they save their lives. Some women have abortions and say they regret it forever. And Catherine Zapone was saying, even if a woman regrets it, the government should still support the option.
Okay, just finally then, Alan, I spoke to you about this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe months ago now at this stage, shortly after we started the show, and you were talking about how you thought the government was going to run out of time in terms of educating people for the referendum about the different aspects of this, because it's so complex and it's so difficult, I suppose, really, and dense, and you really need to sit down and read and read and read to educate yourself, and most people are not going to do that. Can it be done, do you think? We're talking now about a May date or possibly early June. Can it be done?
I think you already saw Catherine Noone starting to do it a few minutes ago. She's distilling it down to two things. The pills, which I think are kind of new in Irish politics. Like, people in the abortion argument have known about them for a while, but people in politics haven't. And the second thing is getting it across that it is impossible to legislate for rape. Like, do we want a situation where women have to prove that they've been raped, that they're under pressure to sign an affidavit to pursue a criminal conviction afterwards? We've been saying for a long time, you know, X percent of people in newspaper polls support rape, incest and fatal abnormality. You can already see politicians, certainly from the committee and even the Fine Gael government side, saying to people, that is a lovely idea to have an uncontroversial abortion law, which is such an Irish option, but we can't actually do it. It might do more harm than good, as the committee heard about the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Bill, so they're pushing for free, safe, legal and free access up to 12 weeks.
All right, a long way to go, and no doubt I will be talking to you about it again in the next couple of months. Ellen Coyne, Senior Reporter with the Times Ireland Edition, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Between the Lines on News Talk.